Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, we would like to thank you for joining us here on the Socialist Insight. Today we're supposed to be having Alan Mackey. He's supposed to be joining us on the program. We have quite a bit of information that we would like to share with you today. As you saw posted on the internet, we posted quite a bit of some of the same topics that we have discussed over the last few months, and those issues are still relevant today. Ruth Ann, are you there?
I'm here.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, Alan, he called. He said he would be with us today, so I am expecting that he will be with us. Well, anyway, we'll still go and start our program.
Right.
Alan, he is representing various left organizations that he's been affiliated with, and some of the issues that we will be discussing today will be on labor, immigration, health care, women's issues, economics. So it's quite a few topics that we will be covering. I had some people once, it was posted on Facebook and some of the other sites that we indicated what we'd be discussing today. They were saying, how are you going to be able to discuss all that in one program? So what we're going to do is we're going to do...
I said we'll just do
the best we can with the time that we have. The program, as you know, it comes on every Monday, and we come on for 1 hour. And during that hour, we try to discuss issues that are relevant to the left. And last week we had Stephanie Kolinsky. She's with the Socialist Party USA. And we were talking about that organization and what has taken place as far as to expand their agenda and also things that have taken place since the 2012 election. Very importantly,
what we have Alan here. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Hello, Alan?
Yeah.
Are you there, Alan?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, Alan, how are you doing today?
Good. How about you?
Good. I was just mentioning very briefly some of the things that we will be discussing today on the program. And just finishing up my last point, as I mentioned, we had Stephanie. She was Stephanie Kolinsky. She is one of the chairs with the Socialist Party USA. And she was just discussing what that organization is doing as they move forward through 2013. And, of course, we have elections that we discuss from time to time, future elections that will be taking place in 2013 and 14. And, of course, all the issues that we discuss are very, very critical to the well-being of working-class people and how we can be able to survive under capitalism. Alan, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining the program today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Alan, I might mention Alan Mackey. He will be joining us probably at least once, maybe twice a month. He is very knowledgeable about many of the issues that involve working people and also much of the politics on the left. Alan, what we'll do, like we did last time, I'd like for you to take maybe a minute or so just to share a little bit about your background, and then we're going to start with our discussion today.
Okay, I'm the director of organizing for the Midwest Casino Workers Organizing Council. We work with casino workers trying to organize unions in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. I've been involved in a number of different peace organizations, civil rights organizations, environmental organizations for a number of years, going back to the mid-1960s. And, you know, right now I'm also involved with the New Progressive Alliance, an organization that's trying to bring people together around specific issues. I guess you might say our top issues are we consider that we should be uniting around our peace and full employment. And I think full employment is a very important issue right now because the Democrats and the Republicans even, they talk about jobs, 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 but nobody is talking about full employment, and the only way we can get full employment is through peace. because as long as we're squandering all these resources and the wealth of this country on wars, we're obviously not going to have enough money for a WPA program or a CCC program or a CETA program or any other program that will create jobs.
So now, Ellen, a lot of what we see when you're talking about jobs, many of the right-to-work states and states that you see that are moving toward that type, those type of that have legislation where they're moving the economies of those states and moving the industries and the businesses of those states toward right-to-work. They're saying that right-to-work states create more jobs. Obviously, I disagree with that myself. Well, they create more jobs, but explain why right-to-work states creating more jobs is not necessarily better for working people.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they create more jobs. There's a lot of factual information that tends to point that they don't really that right-to-work doesn't create more jobs, which I'm pretty sure I agree with. I haven't seen all the facts and figures on that. But one thing that right-to-work does do is lower wages in those states. And, you know, we can create all the jobs we want. You can put everybody in this country to work and have full employment, but if these people are working at poverty wage jobs, a job doesn't really mean too much. So, you know, what we really want to talk about doing is creating a full employment economy,
living wage
jobs.
Right. And that's the point that I was making, because many of the right-to-work states, as you can see, in almost every state, once it becomes a right-to-work state, you see income actually dropping for working people in comparison to states that are not right-to-works, work states. And also what happens in many cases, you have, instead of one person doing a single job, now you have two people doing the same job, and in some cases, for far less income. What have you been doing in regards to right-to-work laws in your state, Alan?
Well, in Minnesota, the Republicans had been proposing that they were going to bring forward some right-to-work legislation. It never came to fruition because there was massive opposition to it. But the Democrats here now have a supermajority. They control the governor's office, the state legislature, both the House and the Senate. And essentially what the Democrats are doing, while they're not pushing right-to-work legislation, they're pushing an attack on the standard of living on working people. You know, they came into office talking about jobs, jobs, jobs. But what the Democrats have done in Minnesota is created a bunch of jobs at poverty wages. They've opened up Menards and given them all kinds of tax abatements and subsidies, and these jobs pay anywhere from $7.50 to $8.50 to $9 an hour, which are poverty wages. Obama promised to raise the minimum wage to $9 an hour during his first term in office.
Right.
He didn't even raise it 10 cents. He didn't raise it at all. And
right.
Here in Minnesota
he did
now,
nothing.
The same Democrats that are supporting Obama and that supported him, they're proposing an increase in the minimum wage to $7.50 an hour, which is pitiful. It's shameful. Nobody can live on that. Even a kid going to college can't live on $7.50 an hour.
Right.
So, you know, we've seen what the Democrats are doing. While the Republicans might be pushing this right-to-work legislation, the Democrats, on the other hand, are attacking our standard of living. While they propose a $7.50 an hour minimum wage, they're also proposing to increase the sales taxes here in Minnesota. On clothes, which have no sales tax now, the Democrats want to put a sales tax on clothing. So, you know, this will be a drastic cut to the standard of living of working people. So
right.
We see the Democrats and Republicans working together with, you know, Wall Street's attack on working people. And one way or another, you know, we're going to get screwed.
Well, basically, what we're seeing, people are still working at poverty wages, and in most cases, when the people that are in these minimum wage jobs, they're working part time, and also they're working without benefits as well. So when I say part time, they're working in many cases less than 30 hours a week, and having to support families on that. As you mentioned, even college students cannot afford to live at those wages. Now, one of the other things that you see is that we, the last time when you were on the program, we were talking about this fiscal cliff, which is something that has actually been created by Congress. In other words, they set those limits, and they say if we go over these limits, then there's the cliff. So now we've gone from a fiscal cliff to Congress talking about increasing the debt limit, the debt ceiling, as far as how much Congress can borrow, going over the $16.4 trillion that it is already where it's already sat at. What is your take on that, Alan, in regards to increasing the debt ceiling, and is there a need to do that, and what ways should we take as a responsible society and as a community rather than continuously increasing debt, which eventually falls on the backs of working people?
Well, I think common sense should sort of be telling us that we can't be increasing the debt limit. If we look at Obama's proposed budget, and some left to say that Obama has progressive proclivities and all this kind of thing, but if we look at his proposed budget, we see the over 50% of the budget that he's proposing goes to militarism and wars.
Right.
So, you know, common sense sort of says that a country can't keep squandering its wealth and natural resources and human resources on these wars and militarism and still expect to, you know, maintain any kind of so-called civilized society where human needs are going to be met. So I think, you know, what we got to look at doing is putting people to work. That's the real way to solve all the budget problems and all kinds of other problems in this country. Because as long as we have millions of people that are unemployed, this is a terrible drain on the economy to start with. Wall
Right.
Street likes unemployment because unemployment drives all wages down, especially when you got massive unemployment like we have now. And back in 1945, Wright Patman, who was a congressman from Texas at the time, a very populist, progressive-type congressman, he proposed that the United States, he proposed legislation that would mandate that the United States government be responsible for maintaining full employment. Legislation was defeated, not by Republicans, but by mainly his own Democrats. And, you know,
it was defeated by the Democrats.
And, you know, we've got to begin to look at why these politicians keep talking about jobs, 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 but they won't take the responsibility upon themselves to create a full employment and economy. That's the real issue. Full employment is the issue. They can talk all they want about jobs, but I haven't seen one single job that's been created. You know, they talk about creating jobs through helping and assisting small businesses. Well, why aren't they talking about massive universal social programs like the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, the Civilian Conservation Corps, or the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, which Richard Nixon signed into law. You know, if they were talking about doing these things and creating real jobs at living wages, all these people would be paying taxes to start with. Right now, they're
right.
A drain on the economy because they're not contributing anything to the wealth of this country. They're not contributing any kind of taxes for Social Security or anything else. So, you know, it's only a country can only sustain this kind of unemployment for so long, and this unemployment is leading to a big part of the collapse that we're experiencing with the whole economy right now. And the unemployment is all over the world. It's a major problem, and these politicians aren't willing to deal with it because the people that support these politicians are the Wall Street people that are profiting from unemployment, forcing wages down.
And as you mentioned, when you're talking about unemployment and where Obama is as far as since he took office in 2008, today we still have more people unemployed today in 2013 than when he took office in 2008. So that has been a total failure in leadership. And as you mentioned, the way you must put people back to work, and there are jobs that can be created, but those jobs are not being created because they're trying to do that where they can get just maintain cheap labor. And this also is to the benefit of Wall Street. Now, what I notice also when now, as I just mentioned, they're talking about increasing the debt ceiling. But if they can't increase the debt ceiling, where are they going to make the cuts? Where do they talk about making the cuts first? Social Security. They say we will not be able to send out those Social Security payments. We will not be able to pay the veteran benefits. We will not be able to pay our troops. What about the subsidies for big corporations? What about the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars wasteful spending that they're doing for the military and for occupying other countries? This is what they're talking about, that they need to make cuts or put in jeopardy what will be there for working people as opposed to what will be there for the richest in our society and big corporations. Had you seen that, some of these things when they were talking about increasing the debt ceiling, and Obama, he's trying to take his position, saying that that he's going to stand his ground, Congress is standing their ground, but that's what's on the table, Social Security, veterans benefits, and paying the troops, which, as you know, we believe that they need to bring the troops home.
Right.
But what is your take on that, Alan?
Well, I think the only reason that they began talking about Social Security is because the one of the biggest swindles in U.S. history has taken place with the Social Security Trust Fund. $2.7 trillion has been taken from the Social Security Trust Fund and brought into the general fund, and most of that money is, as the budget shows, is going for wars and militarism. And what they're trying to do is get out from repaying those IOUs that they left in place of the money that they've stolen from the American people that was earmarked and was intended for Social Security benefits and Social Security programs. But this is terrible. It's nothing but a swindle that these politicians are trying to get away with. And, we shouldn't stand for it. We should be raising so much hell in this country that it's impossible for these people to govern the country when they start proposing things like this. There's a $16 trillion debt already. Well, they're trying to write off a big chunk of that debt, about a seventh of that debt, by not having to repay the Social Security Trust Fund, and that's why Social Security is under attack. They would hope that they can get rid of Social Security so that they never have to pay that money back. To them, it's an accounting thing and a bookkeeping thing where they wipe out, close to $3 trillion in debt with the stroke of a pen. And the American people.
Well,
should
you know, that's a good point that you brought up, Alan. You say we should be raising hell. Why aren't we raising hell?
Well, I think the reason the kind of hell isn't being raised that needs to be raised is because so many of these liberal, progressive, and left organizations' leaders have been backing Obama to the hilt. They've been making excuses for him. They've been talking about that Obama has progressive proclivities. When I asked Angela Davis to explain what Obama's progressive proclivities are, she never responded. This is terrible. Obama is a reactionary. He's as reactionary as you can get. There's nothing progressive about Obama. He has a Wall Street agenda. How can there be anything progressive about an agenda that's established by Wall Street? We need to establish a people's agenda and challenge Wall Street for power, uniting people around a real progressive agenda. And that's going to have to come right from the grassroots. Back in the 1930s, we have to realize organized labor at the time, the AFL, it was just the AFL at that time, American Federation of Labor, the leaders of that organization, they opposed Social Security, they opposed the minimum wage, and they went on a rampage insisting that a national public health care system be withdrawn from the New Deal program. So, essentially today we have the same kind of labor leadership. They're making excuses for Obama, left and right. They pulled together this coalition, which they call Strength and Social Security. Well, this coalition, if you look at the organizations that are in it, this is the same coalition that undermined the single-payer universal health care movement in this country and put those organizations behind Obama's Obamacare, which is nothing but the health insurance and pharmaceutical industry bailout and profit maximization act. You know, that's all that it is. And now this outfit is going to do the same thing with Social Security. They're going to betray the American people. They haven't consulted with their members. This coalition has over 300 organizations, which means it has it's speaking on behalf of literally millions of American people. But the members of these organizations haven't given consent to these so-called leaders like Richard Trumka and Leo Gerard, Robert Borisage, or any of these other people to compromise on Social Security. And that's what they intend to do, just like they so-called compromised on the health care issue. They're going to betray the American people and sell us out. And, you know, the only thing that can prevent that is if we have neighborhood organizations, community organizations, grassroots organizations and rank-and-file organizations of workers that come together like they did in the 1930s, and we'll have to develop a whole new leadership because we can't rely on any of these people to defend the standard of living or fight for peace.
Well, you're saying develop a whole new leadership. Is leadership out there for the left today?
Well, if the leadership's not there, people got to look in the mirror and say, hey, I got a responsibility to do something, and that's where
good
that
point.
Leadership is going to come from. It's not going to come out of thin air. You know, we got to help people develop into leaders, and people are going to have to take on that responsibility. Nobody can fight for working people, but working people have to fight for themselves. And that's been one of the problems. We've had a union leadership in this country now for years that claims that they represent workers and that they're taking care of workers' problems, but they've kept workers outside of the whole...
From the negotiations.
Yeah, and the workers have no say even within their own unions. You know, you go to a union meeting where, you know, like a paper mill over up here in northern Minnesota, Boise Cascade and International Falls, they employ like 1,000 people, and half the time they can't even get a quorum to their union meetings. This is terrible. And when people come to the union meetings with their problems, they're maligned and ridiculed and harassed, you know. And this isn't what unions are supposed to be for. Unions are supposed to be the voice of working people, and unions are supposed to fight for the needs of working people. And we have a whole union leadership that treats the membership that all they want is dues out of them. And as far as their problems go, they don't want to hear about it, you know.
Right.
And I've traveled widely in especially Wisconsin and Michigan, and workers every place are talking about, hey, we need a general strike. We got to teach these people like Snyder and Walker a lesson. And yet the union leadership is pushing people not towards a general strike or these mass actions and mass activities, but they're pushing them back into the arms of the Democratic Party, you know. And the Democratic Party is one of the main sources of our problems in this country right now, as evidenced by Obama.
Right. The Democrats are the problem, not the solution.
Exactly.
Alan, what I'm going to do is I usually, at this time in the program, we have Alan Mackey. He's on our program once again today. He's been on in the past, a very eloquent speaker in regards to issues involving the left. Alan, what I would like for you to do is take maybe another minute just to reintroduce yourself. We're going to continue with the interview, and we're going to get into issues such as immigration, health care, women's issues, and a few other subjects. So could you just take a minute, Alan, and then we're going to move on from there.
Sure. I've been involved in a number of activities in the peace movement, civil rights movement, labor movement. At the present time, I'm director of organizing for the Midwest Casino Workers Organizing Council. We're working with casino workers that are forced to work in these smoke-filled casinos at poverty wages and without any rights under state or federal labor laws. I've been involved in the struggle to try and save what's called the Big Bog up here in northern Minnesota. It's the largest freshwater aquifer south of the Canadian border, and we're fighting the peat mining that's taking place that's destroying this freshwater aquifer. I've been working with the people that are involved in trying to stop the sulfide mining in both Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan. So, you know, I've been involved in a lot of different things with a lot of people involved in just the people's problems, you might say. And I think that, you know, I found from my own experience that if people don't speak up for themselves, nobody is going to speak up for them. We'll end up being used by these foundation-funded outfits that just use us to raise money and don't care whether our problems get solved. We'll be used by the Democratic Party They want votes, and they talk about jobs, 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 but we never see a job.
Right. Well, Alan, we really do appreciate everything that you're doing, especially in the fight to the fight for working people. Alan, we're going to move on to a different subject here. We're going to speak a little bit about immigration. Obviously, we can see immigration reform. We hear that every 2 to 3 years. It's back in the news. And Congress, we can see that they use it as a political football. They use it as a political football during election seasons, and now it's become a political football again about election reform and also the costs, supposedly the costs that it has on the U.S. economy. How serious is Congress about immigration reform?
Well, I don't think Congress is any more serious about immigration reform than they are about jobs or peace or anything else. My view of immigration is that workers should have the same rights to cross borders as capital does. And I happen to have been in a position where I was a so-called illegal myself, having lived in Canada and having been deported, so I know what people are facing when they face these deportations and everything. I know what it is to be thrown in a little, like a dog coop by these immigration people and held there not wondering what's going to happen to you. And it's a terrible thing because Obama has been responsible for more deportations than I think any other president.
Yes,
and
he
says he's for immigration reform. Treating working people that want a better life as criminals is, to me, it's the epitome of, you know, insanity and disrespect for human beings.
Well, I find it very interesting. During the term of President Bush, he was responsible for building a $40 billion wall to make certain that they could prevent undocumented workers from coming across the border. And here now, under the Obama administration, he has done more toward border enforcement and to prevent immigrants from coming across the border than any president in the last 40 years.
Exactly. What is going on
with the left? They can't see this.
The worst part of it is it's the American corporations that are making life miserable in these other countries to the point where people want to leave. You know, if we were promoting policies in other countries demanding that the corporations have human rights policies and real living wages, you wouldn't see people wanting to leave their own countries. But they're being made miserable in large part by the policies of the United States government and Wall Street. You look at all the mining companies and everything all through South America and Latin America, the fruit and agricultural industry in those countries. You know, they're exploiting people terribly, and the people can't live decent lives. So they naturally they're looking for some place where they can go and improve their living standards. Capital, the big corporations are free to go wherever they want in the world, and that's one of the main problems. You know, our military is defending those corporate interests all over the world, 800 military bases, and they're making life so miserable for the people living in those countries that the people want to leave their own country. You know, I don't know anybody that really wants to leave their own country, and most people love their country. They want to stay there, and they want a decent standard of living for themselves and their families. That's all that people are asking for in the world. And when we criminalize people that come across our border seeking a better life, you know, this isn't supposed to be what this country is supposed to stand for. And that we have politicians now using working people who want a better life as political footballs, you know, this is terrible.
And one of the things what we had under the Clinton administration when they came in with NAFTA, NAFTA was supposed to have been a benefit where it was supposedly to create jobs for working people on both sides of the border. The only thing that we saw that came as a result of NAFTA, it only created more wealth for the capitalists. It did nothing for working people. And unfortunately, Mexico
poverty.
Is an agrarian society, and many of the people that depended on the crops and being able to cultivate their lands, those people were driven away from their own lands where they weren't able to maintain a decent standard of living for their families. So now what they have done is they have exacerbated the problem where you have people trying to come across the border just to improve their standard of living, which you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's, you know, we don't see other countries, you know, throwing Americans out of their countries and calling them illegals and everything when they come down there to exploit the people. You know, even the big capitalists that are doing massive harm to people in those countries aren't treated the way that so-called illegal workers are treated here in this country. And this is a real crime of the 20th and 21st century, I think, the way working people are being treated because they want a better life. Workers, if capital can cross borders, workers should be able to cross borders to where they can get the best living standards, too. That's my opinion. I don't think there should be any restrictions on workers crossing any borders, any place to search for a better life.
Right, exactly. And as you mentioned, this is only people that are just in search of a better life for themselves and their families. You have there in Minnesota, you have 4% of the people there in Minnesota, 4% of the population that are non-citizens. And here in California, you have 15% of the population that are non-citizens. But we believe that these people should have a right to come here not only to work, without all this sham that we see taking place in Washington, but we believe that they should be entitled to health care as well.
Exactly. They should have all the rights and benefits that the American people have. You know, when they come here and work, they're producing profits for the big corporations, and they're entitled to Social Security. They're entitled to any kind of welfare. They're entitled to public education and everything else. The problem is we don't have enough social programs to support the American people, and we should be joining with people that come here from other countries to get better benefits for everybody, including the so-called illegals. I even hate that word. I don't even know where it comes from.
No, I hate that word.
Yeah, but to define the problem, you sort of got to use it. But to criminalize a human being because they want to work, what sense does that even make, you know? It's the lowest... I don't even know what to call it, but when you say somebody's a criminal because they come here to work, it makes no sense at all.
No. And plus, here in California, we see the Border Patrol and like that just on the watch for people that are, even sometimes if it's several people that are in a van or whatever, right away they're pulled over, and many of these people that are there just trying to make a living. They're not... It's no criminal activities other than, like as I mentioned, just trying to make a living. Now, as I mentioned, many of these persons are without health care. They're here in this country. As socialists, we believe that they are entitled to health care because that's a human right, is to receive whatever care is necessary if there's any type of illness for an individual or their families. What is on the table right now in regards to that, or what are the attacks that working people, especially undocumented people, are looking at in regards to even under Obamacare when it comes to health care for undocumented people?
Well, I think they're just out of luck unless they have some kind of phony identification or they go into a emergency room where they might find some doctors and stuff that are sympathetic to their plight. And that's happening more and more, doctors in some of these places where there's high numbers of people that aren't American citizens, they'll go in and get health care, and the doctors just sort of say, we'll send you a bill, and knowing that they're not going to get paid. And, you know, I work with a lot of so-called undocumented and illegal workers in the casino industry. One of the largest casinos in this country, the Mystic Lake Casino Empire down near Minneapolis, which employs some 5,000 people, about 10 to 12% of the workers in that casino are undocumented workers. Now, put yourself in a position of having to work for somebody in an industry where none of the workers have any rights to start with, but on top of that, you're an undocumented worker where you have no rights whatsoever, and these managements can force people to do whatever they want if the people want to keep their job. And some of these people are working 14, 16, 18 hours a day, at you know, sometimes they're not even paid minimum wages. We've got pay stubs where some of these workers, undocumented workers, have been getting $5 and $6 an hour at this huge Mystic Lake casino empire that makes billions of dollars a year. You know, this is terrible.
And people must understand, Alan, that we haven't seen too much change take place, even from the presidency of Lyndon Johnson under Nixon, under Ford. We haven't seen any much change at all because it's still capitalism. I remember in Los Angeles years ago, you had many of the sweatshops that you had there, and you had many people that were immigrants or people that had come across the border, and they were just coming across just to have jobs.
Right.
And at the time, minimum wage was something like around $2 an hour. And you had people working in these shops that were making anywhere from 75 to less than a dollar per hour. And this is going back over 40 years. So
right.
We haven't seen too much take place, too much change over the last half century under capitalism, because basically what we do is we just elect different functionaries, such as a different president every 4 years or every 8 years. But essentially, we don't see too much really take place, any changes for the benefit for working class people. Alan, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you just to reintroduce, just take another minute, and then what we're going to cover a couple of other topics: women's issues, issues concerning people of color, education, homeless issues, just those few topics before we wrap this up today. Could you take just another minute, and then we're going to get into the remainder of our program, okay? Thank you.
Sure, to sort of work this into the things that we're going to be covering on women's issues. You know, working with casino workers that are trying to organize, a large percentage of the workers are women workers and young women workers in the casino industry that I work with. And these young women of childbearing age are forced to work in these smoke-filled casinos, which is ruining their health. On the issue of racism, people of color, we've been working to try and force the Minnesota government to enforce affirmative action. There's a number of public works programs, including a $2 billion public works programs, including the Viking Stadium and a huge bridge that's going to be built across the river from Minnesota to Wisconsin, across the St. Croix River. That's going to be another $1 billion project. Affirmative action is not being enforced on that. As we look at all these stimulus-funded projects, we've been trying to pressure Obama and his administration to enforce affirmative action. You've had $1 trillion spent on these stimulus-funded projects, and affirmative action is not being enforced at all. So that's, you know, one of the things that we've been working on. And
what we're going to do is, Alan, we're going to get into each one of these. We're going to sort of dissect each one just one at a time. If you can just give your name again and a little bit about your background, and then we're going to just dive right into the rest of this.
Yeah, my name is Alan Mackey, and I'm the Director of Organizing for the Midwest Casino Workers Organizing Council, and I also work with organizations like the New Progressive Alliance.
Well, Alan, first of all, I would like to deal with women's issues, especially in the economy that we're dealing with today, where you have massive unemployment, well over 23 million people that are still underemployed. Now the government, they're so embarrassed about the numbers. Maybe I shouldn't say they're embarrassed about the numbers. They just don't even count the numbers. And they give people numbers just to show that unemployment is coming down. Or in many cases, we see that they don't even count large segments of the population. But we see an increasing number of women that are unemployed. They're going to they're being headed for the unemployment lines. The men, unfortunately, their employment would be at lower wages, and women are now just unemployed.
Right.
Again, I wonder, where's the anger?
Well, I think more and more women
there should be some anger there, and it's not.
Young women are the major victims,
yeah,
of unemployment, as far as I can see, in this country. And
what was that?
Talk about women of color, it's even worse.
Oh, it's even worse.
Yeah. And
I look at in the industry that I work in the automobile industry, women, and I'm in automobile sales, women, you don't see them in the shops. You don't see them in the service areas. You don't see them on the front lines where you see salespeople. The only place you see them is either in here in California. They work in the business office, and they work as receptionists. Other than that, they have no positions for them. A lot of the shops, the small businesses, you don't see women. You'll see possibly a woman working as a receptionist, but once you get into the shops, you don't see women there. One of the things that you mentioned that I saw that was very beneficial, especially to minorities, blacks and other minorities back in the 70s, was affirmative action and quotas. What is your take on affirmative action and quotas and the need for affirmative action and quotas today?
Well, I think that the unemployment figures pretty much show what's happened when affirmative action isn't being enforced. We have massive unemployment once again among communities of people of color. And it's not going to get any better. It's only going to keep getting worse unless affirmative action is enforced. Affirmative action was created to, with the intent of creating a level playing field for people of color, women, and the handicapped. And without affirmative action being enforced, we can see the soaring rates of unemployment among people of color, women, and the handicapped. In fact, there's going to be a conference of, I forgot the name of it, but a group of women construction workers are meeting. And construction is an industry where women made major inroads in gaining jobs in construction over about a 30 to 35-year period. And now almost all those gains are being wiped out.
They have been.
Yeah, and women can hardly get jobs now in the construction industry unless it's holding up a flag or something, telling cars to stop and things like that. But where women have made inroads into operating heavy equipment and carpentry and iron workers, you know, all these gains are being wiped out right now. And women are being marginalized and pushed right out of the almost all employment opportunities in this country. And I think
why is that happening, Alan? Why is it happening to women in this society? Why is it that their voice is not being heard? Or maybe again that lack of leadership. Why not?
Well, it's because Wall Street profits from inequality. When you marginalize and unemploy large sections of the population, be it women or people of color, you're creating a large pool of unemployed people that you can use to say to the other workers, hey, if you get out of line, if you start demanding more, then we got people out here willing to take your jobs. And when these employers are starting to lock out people instead of negotiating in good faith union contracts and everything, they always bring in minorities and women to be the replacement workers or scabs, and that's to create resentment and divisions in our society. And they play this to the hilt. Any way that these employers can divide, it's divide and conquer, divide people so that the profits keep coming in, and as wages are going down. I mean, that's the way these people make money. The less they have to pay workers, the more profits they make. I mean, it's simple arithmetic, and people are going to have to understand that. And people are going to have to understand that when affirmative action is enforced, that raises the living standards and wages for everybody. Any time you put people to work that have been large pools of unemployed people prior to that, you're pushing wages up. Whereas when they remain a pool of unemployed people, that's pressure on wages down. Even I heard Paul Krugman in an interview say, "Well, we got to put more people to work, and we got to raise wages, the minimum wage. But we don't want to raise the minimum wage too much, and we really we'll never have full employment." And he makes all kinds of excuses that while people are quitting their jobs, looking for work, and everything. But these people are just making excuses for why we have this massive unemployment in this country. Capitalism, Wall Street, needs unemployment. This is what they profit from. One of the, you know, you know, we talk about these union busting firms and everything, but one of the main tools for union busting is unemployment. As long as
right.
you have this huge pool of unemployed people, it's almost impossible for workers to go on strike in this country because the employers
right, exactly.
find it so easy to hire people that have been unemployed, some of them for years. In among Native American people, people have been unemployed for generations. Their families have lived with unemployment for generations, three, four, five, six generations in this country. You know, you have unemployment on Indian reservations, 65 to 85% unemployment. What does that mean? That means that people are going to be poor. People without jobs are going to be poor people. Common sense,
right.
you know.
And what I see, Alan, even in the communities where I live, I'm here in Southern California, and just recently I was in Los Angeles and some of the communities that I was raised in, Western Avenue, I was over near Normandy Avenue. A lot of people know where Normandy Avenue was. That was when Rodney King, when the riots happened in 1992. They know that was a very poor community there in Los Angeles. And as I was just going around the streets, you just saw many blacks throughout the whole community just, you know, milling around the streets without jobs. And you see this throughout Los Angeles. And in some parts of this country, you have as many as 40% of the black community, and in the youth community, well over 50% of blacks that are unemployed. 50%. This is a disaster as far as policy. And here, these are the same people that went to the polls and threw their votes for Obama. For what?
Yeah, that's what I wonder, too. You know, it's one thing to vote for somebody knowing that you're going to get something out of that politician, but nobody even made any attempts to gain any to go to Obama and say, we're not going to vote for you unless you do this and this and this.
Right, exactly.
You know, Ben Jealous from the NAACP, even though he's had some lower-level officials in the NAACP respond to some of our complaints about the Viking Stadium and the bridge, that's these billion-dollar projects here in Minnesota, he hasn't done anything to say to Obama, why aren't you enforcing affirmative action and demanding that affirmative action be enforced? See, it's not like people will be asking for anything that's not already there. It's not like this is going to cost the American taxpayers any money or anything. All that it's going to do is improve the condition of people that are being forced into poverty, and they're living in despair right now. You know, we see it all over what you describe. You can even go to a smaller community like Duluth, Minnesota, and see, you know, minority people wandering the streets without any jobs and stuff, people that are homeless. You know, it's a terrible situation. I was down in Virginia and North Carolina and driving through the hills down there, and I drove off the road, and there are large, I don't know what you want to call them, like little tent cities of people that are unemployed and homeless living in some of these places, you know. And they set up tents, and they live there, and some places you see 20, 30, 40 tents of all these people that are homeless and they're unemployed, they can't get jobs or anything, and they're all living in tents up in the hills there down south. And, you know, for this to be happening in a country, the wealthiest country in the world, it's terrible.
And I see that right here in the communities where I live. I live right here in the communities of Temecula and Marietta, which is in southwest Riverside County. And on a daily basis, I see homelessness throughout these communities. And if you go back 15 years ago, it was probably just the number of homeless people. You did not see them on the streets, and now it's a very visible presence. And that's even when you get into wealthier communities, and especially when you get into the more populated areas, it's a crisis. And a few months ago, I made a visit right there to Fresno, California, which has a population of approximately 300,000 people, and you can see homeless vets all over the city. I mean, we're wearing steel vet uniforms, military uniforms that they had when they were in the military, or just having signs that they need help because they were homeless. But it was all over the city. But we definitely have a homeless crisis in this nation. Again, capitalism is a complete failure, especially when it comes to any working people.
The system is crumbling completely at this point. I don't think any of these people know what to do to straighten anything out, even to where it was at, 10 or 15 years ago. The system is just crumbling right now before our very eyes, and it's a question of how long people are going to put up with this. We need reforms in this country, not to fix capitalism, because it can't be fixed anymore, but we need real massive reforms in this country just to help people cope with the problems as the system collapses. And, we got to start talking, in my opinion, we got to start talking about the socialist alternative to capitalism, and we got to put that on the table for people to consider.
Now, again, we need to find out where's the leadership, because we are going to need leaders for this transformation to take place, because, as you mentioned, capitalism, the whole system is crumbling. It's just a matter of time, when will it happen? But it is happening. I'm going to just backtrack on one thing, just a quick second, when we were talking about women being unemployed, and just a point I wanted to bring up, is that we have to understand also in a capitalist system, it's all about class. When people look at, especially in manufacturing, when they look at jobs such as in the automobile industry that I work in, and many of the places where I've worked in the past, working in warehousing and businesses where it requires physical labor, they choose to discriminate against women or push the women out of those positions because they rather have men to work in those positions. Even though women can do the same work, they rather have men to do those jobs just because they can have them doing more of the manual labor. But this is still no cause for discrimination. And again, it's because of the lack of leadership that no one is speaking up in that regards. Alan, just two other areas that we're going to cover before we conclude this interview today. And Alan, again, I'd like to extend my appreciation for you coming back on to our program. Whether we're talking about international or national issues or many of the issues that we covered today, you're very knowledgeable, and I appreciate you sharing your expertise with our listeners. Just a couple other issues. One of the things that we see on a regular basis, we see young people, again, a very silent group. They, from time to time, they start complaining when those tuitions go up. But, again, we're looking at when they're talking about increasing the debt ceiling, when they talk about the fiscal cliff, is monies that we can see that the waste is there for military, is the waste is there for subsidies for big corporations, for bailouts for big corporations. We can see that the money is being wasted. When we talk about education, we're talking about our future there. Again, what is happening that there's not a voice even in the young community, the youth in our nation, where's the outrage?
Well, I think we're beginning to see more and more of the outrage among the youth. Part of that outrage, though, unfortunately, is is channeled into the wrong kind of things, crime and stuff like that. Young people see that they don't have any future getting jobs, and they're turning more and more to crime, it's created a big problem. Young people are going to have to start forming their own organizations just like everybody else to demand their rights. And, I don't know what the official unemployment rate is among youth, but it's very obviously very high. And again, like you pointed out, especially in the minority communities, and unless people have organizations that they can work through to make their demands on government and begin to not just make demands on government, but to participate in a way that challenges Wall Street for power through, independent and alternative political parties and organizations, we're not going to see a whole lot of change. There was a huge youth movement back in the 60s, and we're going to have to see massive youth movements like that again around the jobs issue. I don't know how we can escape the fact that one of the main issues in this country today is the need for full employment. And youth are going to have to take a leading role in that because it's their future that's there.
Right.
Otherwise, we're going to see a whole generation of young people, the only jobs that they're going to have is going and fighting these dirty wars for Wall Street in Iraq and Afghanistan and every place else in the world defending the corporate interest. And these, what do you call them, the people, that the recruiters, the military recruiters. They're just like vultures as they go after these young people. I mean, they hound them and harass them to join the military. They lie to them about the benefits that they're going to get and what they'll get when they get out. And we see what the youth get out of it. As you pointed out, they're homeless. They're walking around in their military uniforms. They don't know where they're going to sleep that night. They don't know where they're going to get their next meal, you know. And this is the future that youth are going to have in this country if they don't stand up and fight for their rights. That's what we're talking about. People are going to have to fight
Alan,
for their rights.
I just want you to share, we only have around two more minutes here, what is the New Progressive Alliance? What is that about?
Okay, the New
Progressive Alliance. And I might mention to our listeners that I am part of that organization. But share with our listeners what the New Progressive Alliance is about.
Well, it's an organization that came together about two or three years ago through discussions that had been taking place on Fire Dog Lake, and it evolved into an internet organization that was concerned that progressive people, the liberals, progressive and the left, should come together on the major issues that they agree on. And, the number one issue we think in this country is the question of peace. We need to end these wars. Number two is unemployment. We need to struggle for a full employment economy. And we're hoping to see, even though people may not be able to agree to be in the same political parties, we're hoping that people from the Green Party, the Justice Party, the Socialist Party will come together and make sure that we're all moving in the same or similar direction towards the goals that we want to achieve. Number one, peace. Number two, full employment. We're saying you can't have full employment with a war economy. Full employment requires a peace economy. And, these are some of the things we're trying to point out to people. We focus on climate change. We think that there's a lot of jobs that can be created through climate change, not through climate change, but by fighting climate change and setting new priorities for our country to protect the environment. So, these are some of the things that we're very concerned about, and we want to see liberals, progressives, and the left working together rather than fighting amongst themselves.
Now, is there anything coming up within the next, in 2013, where you have any conferences or conventions or anything with the New Progressive Alliance that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, what we would like people to do is tell us where there's going to be conferences and conventions where we can maybe set up a booth and start talking to people about some of these things. Our main goal right now is to, you might say, to put boots on the ground. We want to go from being just an internet organization and communicating by emails and stuff to actually starting state organizations of the New Progressive Alliance. And we're asking people to become volunteers, to become liaisons with the NPA, the New Progressive Alliance, in their states, so that we can begin forming congressional committees that will focus on congressional elections by bringing forward, the peace issue, the unemployment, full employment economy issues. And we think that it's necessary to actually talk to people face to face rather than just on the internet, because it's that face to face and first to person.
Well, Alan, we appreciate you joining. Alan Mackey joining us again today. We appreciate you joining us. We'll be looking forward to hearing from you within the next couple of weeks. Next week, we'll have a representative from the Freedom Socialist Party, discussing some of the things that that party is doing throughout the country, not only in the last 2012 election, but what they're doing for feminist issues. Remember, our program is call-in. Feel free to call in and join us at any time when we're on every Monday at this time. Again, thanks again for joining the Socialist Insight. See you next week.